This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, January 5th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, Boulder City Council held its first meeting of the year last night amid the aftermath of a major local disaster. We'll get a recap from Boulder Beat's Shay Castle. Then we'll hear a commentary from Priscilla Dan Courtney on the bright flame of community. As always on Wednesday morning, we'll have Chris Moore's commentary, Make Them Hear You. And then Brigitte Mars will bring us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour, and then we spend a public affair rebroadcasting a town hall hosted last night by Colorado's Division of Insurance. The online event drew around 900 attendees and was packed with useful information for people who live in disaster-prone regions. At 9:30, Uncle Jeff will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead this morning after these headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
Boulder County officials announced early this morning that all hard and soft closures will be lifted as of 6 a.m. for the town of Superior and unincorporated Boulder County, with the exception of South 76th Street, which remains closed between Marshall Road and Sycamore Street. Although closures have been lifted, the areas will be limited to residents only and will be patrolled. There are no changes to the evacuation status in Louisville. Victim advocates will be available today from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Town of Superior Community Hall. The Boulder County Disaster Assistance in Lafayette opened on Monday and will operate from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. 7 days a week. The Daily Camera reports that crews were able to reach 100% containment of the fire on Monday night, but yesterday emergency personnel were on high alert as high winds occurred in the area, posing the risk of flare-ups or toppling weakened structures. Some gusts on Tuesday reached over 80 miles per hour. Contributions to help those impacted by the Marshall Fire have risen to over $26 million. The total includes both GoFundMe accounts and donations to the Boulder County Wildlife Fund, which has received over $12 million. Tatiana Hernandez, CEO of the Community Foundation of Boulder County, said that 43,000 people have given to the Wildfire Fund. Some areas of Boulder County are still under orders to boil water before drinking, cooking, or brushing teeth. In Louisville, officials expect water to be back online by Sunday. Free bottled water is being distributed at the Louisville Recreation Center. In Superior, authorities are hoping to cancel boil water orders by Friday. Meanwhile, Boulder Valley schools opened today after the winter break. Some students were urging authorities to postpone the return. More than 5,200 signatures were gathered on a petition to delay schools reopening. However, the Colorado Sun reports that Rob Anderson, the district superintendent, said in an email to families that schools are the center of the community and they need to be there to support those who need it. Angela Narayan, a professor at the University of Denver, said that schools can help resurrect a sense of normalcy after disruptions like the Marshall Fire. Yesterday, officials at the University of Colorado Boulder said that more than 700 employees and 600 students live in areas that were evacuated last week because of the Marshall Fire. As reported earlier, the spring semester will start with classes being held remotely and dorms not opening until later. Patrick O'Rourke, the university's chief operating officer, said that they are still evaluating who needs help and the best ways they can support affected students, faculty, and staff. Healthcare officials in Denver are warning that as the Omicron variant of COVID-19 continues to spread, hospitals in the area are running out of beds, and the situation could get worse as healthcare workers get sick. At a news briefing of Denver health officials, Kathy Howell, the chief nursing officer at the University of Colorado Hospital, said that staff has been dealing with a surge for 4 months and they are exhausted. As of yesterday afternoon, the Denver Post reports that nearly 1,300 people were hospitalized in the state with COVID-19, an increase of about 130 from Monday, with about 93% of intensive care and general beds full. The University of Colorado Hospital was over capacity and they were housing less sick patients in surge areas. Denver hospitals have turned away patients from out of state because facilities don't have the resources to take care of them. Howell said that this next month is probably going to be the scariest point of the pandemic, as even vaccinated staff are getting sick and having to stay home because of Omicron causing more breakthrough infections. In the city of Denver, Mayor Michael Hancock said that the seven-day positivity rate is now over 25%, which means one of every four tests is positive for the virus. Public health officials hope to see positivity rates below 5%. Due to the virus, the Denver City Council has decided to cease all in-person meetings. According to a news release, public hearings will be done virtually and open online meetings, including committee and regular council meetings. In other news from the Denver City Council, a vote on spending at Denver International Airport has been delayed until next Monday. If passed, a series of contracts would approve spending of more than $1 billion to complete DI's Great Hall project. Councilmember Debbie Ortega pressed for the delay so questions could be answered before a vote. According to the Denver Post, the additional money would come from funds generated by the airport and would be used to finish the project, which has been going on since 2018. The state of Colorado is set to receive hundreds of millions of dollars from legal settlements with Johnson & Johnson and three other drug companies in connection with the opioid crisis. The state attorney general's office said in a release that the settlement agreements, which could result in nearly $400 million for Colorado, will require the participation of counties and municipalities in order to get the maximum payments. All 64 counties and almost 100% of the municipalities in the state have signed off on the agreements. The AG's office said that the state will be poised to act on an opioid response plan as soon as the settlement dollars come in. There is a hazardous weather warning for today. It will be partly sunny until snow becomes likely this afternoon and continuing tonight. The high will be about 39 and the overnight low down to 6 in Boulder and 2 in Denver. Tomorrow the snow has about a 30% chance of continuing in Boulder through the late morning, then partly sunny conditions with a high near 32. Right now it's about 17 degrees along the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Boulder's City Council met for the first time of the year last night. The agenda was heavy in both subject matter and quantity of ground covered. Joining me for a recap is Boulder Beat's Shay Castle. Thanks, as always, for joining me on a Wednesday morning, Shay.
Thanks for having me.
Well, start us off with the overview of what was discussed last night at Council.
Well, as you said, quite a bit. It was a packed meeting. Just seemed like we went from item to item. But I think, you know, the big things were we got a little bit of an update on the Marshall Fire with some information that we hadn't really had before. Not about the fire itself, but about the response efforts, you know, the number of firefighters and such that were deployed during the height of fire. We also learned that Boulder is going to redo its assault weapons ban and high capacity magazine ban. Listeners might remember that a court last year struck down those laws just 10 days before the King Super shooting. But the state legislature has since removed some state preemptions on local gun control laws. So Boulder is going to reinstate those along with some other gun control measures. And lastly, we once again talked about homelessness and the lack of shelter. As Boulder Reporting Lab reported, the Boulder Shelter for the Homeless has reached capacity multiple times this season already and turned people away. So council was asking really what can we do about that?
So let's take those pieces and break them up into separate chunks. First with a disaster response. Of course, Louisville and Superior were hardest hit by the fires, but there's also damage from winds within city limits, and Boulder will also likely be absorbing much of the housing needs of those displaced. And of course, this is superimposed upon a housing crisis that was already in full force prior to the fires. What was discussed with regards to the short and long-term response strategies?
Great question. And obviously housing is a huge concern. So as of right now, the city is waiving its income requirements for any affordable rental units that it has. So which it has quite a few. How many it has open remains to be seen. Thistle Community said they had about 30 units open around the county, which they said was unusual, an unusual number of vacancies and an unusually low number of people on the wait list for those apartments. I don't know if that holds true in the city of Boulder as well, but essentially if you were displaced by the fire, you can get an affordable apartment. So with a rent restricted and much lower than market rate rents, whether or not you income qualify for that, that obviously is kind of a double-edged sword. It's great for fire victims, and as community members noted, it might not be so great for the number of people who already struggle to find housing and have to compete for those units. But the city of Boulder is going to be offering, you know, year leases to folks displaced by the fire. And they talked about what else they could do in terms of, you know, waiving occupancy limits. They already haven't been enforcing those, and they made clear last night that they're not going to. If you take in people affected by the fire and you're over occupancy, they don't care. In fact, city manager Nuria Rivera-Vanderbide said, thank you for taking folks in. And they're going to see what else they can do in terms of converting Airbnbs to long-term housing, maybe waiving some licensing requirements. So it remains to be seen how much that might help, because we are still in such short supply of housing.
Also discussed were steps to take with regards to the shelter reaching capacity and enforcement of the camping ban. What are some of those details?
Well, where we ended up right now, there will be a larger discussion at the council's agenda setting retreat in a couple of weeks. But where we ended up right now is basically the city's going to ask the community who out there is interested in providing overflow sheltering or, you know, a sanctioned campground. They're just going to poke around for ideas and see what comes up, which is a notable shift from the last few years, when anytime extra services have been brought up, staff and council have really roundly rejected that. And we did see a lot of that last night as well, but with a new council majority comes a new direction. So we'll see if anyone in the community has the ability to provide some extra sheltering.
And finally, as you mentioned, the possibility of further gun control measures were on the agenda as well. What exactly are the nuts and bolts of what was proposed?
So they're proposing bringing back what was already instated in 2018, which is a ban on assault weapons and high capacity magazines. And then some stuff we don't exactly know yet, but they talked about, you know, possible reforms to open carry laws, maybe some, you know, gun-free zones within the city around sensitive areas. And then possibly a waiting period for firearm purchases. The message from council, I think Councilman Mark Wallach said, what's the legal line? Let's go right up to it as much as we can do on gun control.
Well, Shay Castle, thank you as always for coming on the program and for keeping us up to date on local government. Is there anything else that I didn't bring up with my questions that you'd want to mention?
No, we're kind of in a holding period right now until council sets their priorities for the next 2 years, which will happen at their retreat. That's the really big thing to watch, because anything new that might be brought up will happen there. So, you know, hang tight until then, I guess.
Shay Castle of BoulderBeat.news, thanks again.
Thank you so much.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Up next, we have a commentary from Priscilla Dan Courtney.
The bright flame of community. The lights went out, the winds blew, and flames engulfed homes, their bright glow darkening the lives of thousands. The snow fell, capping the year's end with white against black. 6,000 acres have been burned, and close to 1,000 homes have been destroyed in the wake of last Thursday's Marshall Fire. Following in the footsteps of the 2013 flood, many earlier fires, and the King Soopers shooting, Boulder County is once again experiencing trauma and tragedy. My hands shake as I write, although I am fortunate to be in the warmth of our home. News of friends and strangers who have lost so much brings tears to my eyes. New Year's revelry is muted due to the spreading inferno and virus. Our community begins to recover, as we bear the grief for so many. We all are asking, how may we help? As we sort through our closets for clothing, coats and boots for warmth to share, we extend a hand. Our community will walk in another's boots for collective healing. Unfortunately, we may all feel victimized by the devastating blaze. As Desmond Tutu writes, God's dream is that you and I and all of us will realize that we are all family. Our family belongs together in our recovery. Yet there's no organization where we may donate our grief. Sadness, pain, and trauma will take time to heal. It is through sharing our story with the support of family, friends, therapy, religious organizations, and spiritual practices that we can find our way. We hold trauma in both our mind and body. Creative practices such as writing, art, and song serve to help our journey. Our bodies hold sadness deep within. Movement through athletic endeavors, dance, and yoga allow the release of our trapped grief. In addition, many may experience survivor guilt, which develops when we witness tragedy at such a close range. We may feel relief that we carry on when others have experienced such devastation. Yet frequently, we also have guilt that our lives have not been upended. This form of guilt is accompanied by shame that is disempowering. Yet it is only from a place of strength that we can be of service. Our neighbors need our strength and compassion, not our guilt. A sense of powerlessness can also develop as we experience the assault of nature's strong fist. We feel at the mercy of these natural disasters, yet our power comes from action as we continue to take steps to combat global warming and its devastating consequences. Heat, drought, and changing rainfall patterns are major contributors to the frequency and seriousness of fire disaster. It is a crime to ignore that reality. We can find a sense of agency as we continue to take action, supporting the health of our environment and all beings within. Mother Earth is on loan from our children. The new year is often a time for resolutions. Yet as we step through the doorway of 2022, it's time to focus on our resilience. My grandmother, who lived to age 96, was not a famous writer, theorist, or visionary, but she was one of my best teachers. Honey, I have lived a long and good life because I have learned how to lose. As the beauty of snow christens a new year, may we have reverence for our losses and celebrate our resilience. Our homes can never truly be burned to the ground when our foundation is our connection to ourselves and our neighbors, both near and far. Fires can be extinguished, but the bright flame of community never goes out. This is Priscilla Dan Courtney.
We go now to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. The House will start to have public hearings from their select committee to investigate the January 6th attack sometime in the next few weeks. As the New York Times said on New Year's Day, every day is January 6th now. The threat posed by the January 6th insurrection persists, with continuing threats to election workers, death threats to political opponents, and dozens of new state laws skewing elections toward Republicans. The Times board called for Republicans to be honest with voters and to confront the extremists. And they wrote, quote, Americans of all stripes who value their self-government should mobilize at every level to win elections and help protect the basic functions of democracy. Also, just last weekend, Bernard Kerik, a Trump loyalist, delivered documents to the January 6th committee, including the, quote, Strategic Communications Plan Giuliani Presidential Legal Defense Team, with a detailed pressure campaign focusing on swing state Republican senators, Arizona, Georgia, Minnesota, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, protests around the country, including at weak members' homes. One document Kerik is not turning over has the ominous title, Draft Letter from POTUS to Seize Evidence in the Interest of National Security for the 2020 Elections. Trump should declare martial law, seize voting machines, and rerun the 2020 election. Meanwhile, Texas Governor Greg Abbott was pressured to investigate the election, and Friday's report said the investigators found nothing out of the ordinary. Liz Cheney described Trump watching the attack on the Capitol from the White House, refusing to call off the insurrection despite the pleas of his staff, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, and even his own daughter Ivanka. His refusal to act, Cheney claims, was, quote, a supreme dereliction of duty. Trump tweeted that Vice President Mike Pence was a coward and made at least one phone call to a senator demanding a delay in counting the electoral votes during the attack. Cheney wants, quote, the American people to understand how dangerous Donald Trump was. Any man who would provoke a violent assault on the Capitol to stop the counting of electoral votes, any man who would watch television as police officers were being beaten as his supporters were invading the Capitol of the United States, is clearly unfit for the future office. The committee has interviewed more than 300 witnesses, collected tens of thousands of documents, and traveled around the country to talk to election officials who were pressured by Donald Trump. Now, after 6 months of intense work, the House committee is preparing to go public. Their goal is not only to show the severity of the riot, but also to make a clear connection between the attack and Trump's brazen pressure on the states and Congress to overturn Joe Biden's legitimate election. 90% of the witnesses called have cooperated. So if you want to let Congress know what you think of this investigation, and remember, Congress people love compliments and expressions of gratitude, you can contact your representative and keep your eyes peeled for an announcement of when the public hearings will begin. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
It's now time to check in with herbalist Brigitte Mars, who brings us her weekly episode of Naturally.
Greetings, welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars, and I thought today I should address trauma, since it seems to be prevalent not only in our area, but worldwide, some kind of trauma. Hey, when things are super stressful, it's more important to take better care of ourselves rather than worse. And I know that's not always easy, but when we can choose nourishing foods, things like warm soups will feel comforting. Ask a friend to make you your favorite holiday dish. There's a lot of herbs that can help soothe a frayed nervous system. And I think of things like oat straw, which is the grassy portion of the oat plant that we get oatmeal from. I also think oatmeal is a very comforting food. Another herb is motherwort. And one of my friends and teachers, Susan Weed, likes to say, motherwort helps to mellow the sharpness of grief. There's also St. John's wort, really good for nourishing a frazzled nervous system. And I think of Eleuthero, which used to be called Siberian ginseng. All of these herbs can help support us. We can use them in tea or tinctures. There's also some supplements that are worthy to know about. There's an Asian patent formula called Ding Xing Wan, DingXinWan. It's also known as Calm Heart Pill. And I find that essential oils can help us through crisis times. Simply smelling essential oil of lavender, rose is another good one, taking an aromatherapy bath, soaking in a bath with Epsom salts, like a whole pound of Epsom salts. Of course, flower essences are another thing we can look to for comforting us during times of trauma. I think of Star of Bethlehem, which is for physical shock and trauma. I also think of Rescue Remedy. It's one of those remedies of don't leave home without it. Put it under your tongue and it'll help comfort you. It does have a little bit of alcohol in it, so if you can't have any alcohol at all, you could put 2 drops on your wrist or on your third eye, forehead, Agnya point. So surround yourself with healing colors. I think of the color green, green clothing, green bedding, green foods. Remember to breathe deeply. And even though it seems like when we lose so much, there's still so much we have. So call upon that which still is a blessing in your life. Volunteer work can help undo the past. Journaling, writing about the trauma can also be helpful. Thank you for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally. Many blessings.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Special thanks to Jamie Sudler, Shay Castle, Priscilla Dan Courtney, Chris Moore, Brigitte Mars, and Rosanna Longo-Better for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for the latest Hightower Lowdown, followed by a rebroadcast of last night's town hall hosted by the Colorado Division of Insurance. The Disaster Assistance Service is open now at 1755 South Public Road in Lafayette to help members of the public who have been affected by last week's wildfires. The hours are from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Stay tuned for important information about filing insurance claims.